Chapter 1. What are you? The question lingered. He could not exorcise it. The predator lurked at the outer edges of the Lepidus system. It moved slowly through the void, waiting for its prey. It was not a sleek hunter, but it was immense. Over 4,000 meters long, its hull was thick-bodied with a massively armed prow that projected forwards like a clenched fist. There was nothing subtle about its design. It was a monster whose every rivet and plate was slaved to a single purpose, the brutal annihilation of its enemies. Now it stalked one particular target, one that had to be lured into the killing ground. The predator was the Verdict of the Anvil, strike cruiser of the Salamander's Reserve 5th Company. On the elevated strategium of the cathedral-like bridge, Captain Mulcibar briefed his officers. His broad, heavy-browed countenance was not one that smiled easily. He had the visage of a stern, impassive god of war, carved out of onyx, his red eyes the glow of the furnace deep within. But as the captain spoke, Sergeant Barbarin thought he could detect a hard satisfaction in Mulcibar's tone.
The missions undertaken by our brothers in the Raven Guard and the White Scars have been successful. The orcs have been dealt severe blows on the planet and its moon. Of more immediate concern to our mission, these two strikes appear to have had the desired effect. Our sensorium has detected the warp displacement of a large body accompanied by numerous smaller ones on approach.
He is coming, Sergeant Nelius said. Mulcibar nodded.
So it would seem.
There was a stirring among the officers, an anticipation of battle that bordered on eagerness. For some, and Barbarin was one of those, the wait had been galling. First, the Salamanders had been diverted from their original course. They had been bound for Antagonis, there to assist the Black Dragons combat a plague of undeath. But a more immediate threat to the wider Imperium had declared itself in this system, and so they had responded, only to wait. While the Raven Guard and the White Scars fought with honor, the Salamanders had been stuck out here, hundreds of millions of kilometers from the fields of battle, preparing for an opportunity that might never materialize. Their target was the Orc leader himself. The Overfiend. The invasion of the system was his doing, but there had been no possibility of retaliation until now. As far as Imperial intelligence could tell, the Overfiend remained within an enormous fleet, one far beyond the ability of the currently assembled human forces to tackle. But while they could not go to him, they could make him come to them. The broader strategic goal of killing the Overfiend's lieutenants had been to lure the monster out. And here he came. The wait was over. The Forge of War called. What are you? The words looped, a pulsing beat through Hagaren's head as he headed for the Engineerium. He had not thought the question needed asking. He had not thought about such a question at all. He was himself, as he had always been. There had been changes these last years. He was aware of them, even if there was no emotional weight that accompanied that awareness. But the essential truth remained. He was Hagaren, tech marine of the Salamander's 5th Company. How could there be any questions to ask? But one had been asked, and not who are you, as damning and doubting as that would have been. What are you? The doubts were far more fundamental, his identity questioned down to its absolute core. And the question had been asked by not just any brother, but by Barbarin. Hagaren's mind, seeking the roots of its unease, flew back to Heliosa, the beacon city of the Salamander's home planet of Nocturne, more than a century ago. Two aspirants survived the trials to become scouts. That they had known each other before their first true testing on the anvil was unusual. What was unheard of was that they came essentially from the same house. Barbarin was the son of a dealer in Sark hides. His family had taken in the orphaned Hagaren when his parents had died in the time of trials. The two boys had bonded. They were both apprentices to Barbarin's father, though Hagaren had shown none of his foster brother's promise as a tanner. Then they were recruited. They triumphed together. They became scouts together. They became salamanders together, fireborn. For 70 years they fought side by side, bringing the wrath of Vulcan down on the Emperor's enemies. Each knew the other's combat craft as intimately as his own. Their war was a synchronous meshing of lethal gears, never retreating, always implacably advancing on the foe. Their styles were different, but complementary. Barbarin was as mercurial as a salamander ever became, and had a gift for improvisation. His feints and counterattacks surprised the enemy, but not his battle brother, who provided the anchor for their joint assaults. Hagaren was the constant, unwavering, metronomic beat of relentless war upon which Barbarin built his flourishes and variations. Hagaren was the anvil against which Barbarin's spirited hammer smashed Xenos, heretic and traitor. For 70 years they forged a chain of comradeship. But Hagaren had a gift with machines. The boy had been hopeless with the organic messiness of hides, but the space marine understood the mechanical, and when he spoke to that world, it responded. It was perhaps inevitable then that just over 30 years ago, Captain Mulcibar had sent him to Mars. He returned a tech marine, and then, before he could regain his bearings after his absence, Nocturne was invaded. Mulcibar and the Fifth were tasked with the defense of Heliosa. Barbarin and Hagaren were on the front lines, fighting for the life of the sanctuary city of their births. It was not a happy reunion. Hagaren could recognize strain on Barbarin's face, though he did not feel it himself. In fact, he felt very little at all. His induction into the cult of the Omnisire had tempered his emotions. His passions had flattened out to a steady, tempered mixture of logic and worship. His mind and soul were filled with the mysteries of machines and the litanies of the inorganic. When he had become a space marine, he had become something his former mortal human self would barely recognize, let alone understand. And he had felt the inevitable distance from mortals that a warrior of the Adeptus Astartes experienced. It was a distance that the salamanders worked to counteract by remaining a part of the society of Nocturne. It was a distance that had become a yawning abyss when Hagaren returned from Mars. He did not care to bridge it. The flesh was imperfect, a distraction, an obstacle to be overcome. Hagaren was aware, he thought, of the degree to which he had changed. He knew that his alterations went far beyond the physical, but he did not consider them so radical as to have destroyed the self he had always possessed. It had survived the ascension to Space Marine. It lived on in the Tech Marine. So he believed. What are you? The question had come during the Battle of Heliosa. The heaviest fighting on Nocturne had been at the gates of Hesiod. The contingent of the traitor Nihilan's forces that had besieged Heliosa was little more than a diversion from a diversion, but the Kroot and other mercenaries fought there as savagely as anywhere else on the planet. Mulcibar had his squads fight as if to lose Heliosa would be to lose Nocturne. Honor, loyalty, and love of the home world demanded nothing less. And so, for the first time in 3 decades, Hagaren and Barbarin were in combat at each other's side. Their synchrony had once been such that they had fought like a single machine. Now that a large part of Hagaren was machine, the unity was lost. Hagaren could no longer see Barbarin's flourishes as anything other than excessive. They were a pointless waste of energy, a deployment of technique for technique's sake. He saw no need to cater to them and could not fathom why he once had. They brought terrible wrath down on the enemy and butchered the foe in numbers that made hills of corpses, but the music of their joint actions was discordant. They fought well because they were salamanders. They no longer fought well together. When Nihilan's terrible weapon blasted Nocturne to the core, the earth heaved and danced, and walls hurled themselves to the ground. The enemy streamed through overwhelmed void shields and into the city. The savages and Xenos filth wasted no time in descending upon the civilian population. It was as if they knew they were bound to be defeated and had decided to enjoy a premature sack of Heliosa rather than face a futile struggle against the unwavering strength of the salamanders. There was no strategy. There was only the barbaric impulse to cause as much harm as possible before being stopped. A 10-meter breach in the wall opened at the position held by Hagarin and Barbarin's squad. Barbarin and 3 other battle brothers fell with the stone and rockcrete. Rubble pounded the salamanders. Beneath Hagarin's feet, the wall still stood. He looked down and saw his brothers shrugging off the wreckage. They were monuments, animated statues rising from ruins to defy a hostile fate. They were not to be stopped. Nor were their enemies, who traded indomitable strength for the power of the swarm. Kroot and human stormed into a civilian compound 50 meters back from the wall. The people of Heliosa had the innate strength and resilience of all Nocturnians, and they were armed, but they were no match for the military savagery that came at them. Hagaren saw Barbarin lead his group of salamanders to the defense of the populace. He took in the relative distances between the civilians, invaders, and space marines. The outcome was obvious. The salamanders would annihilate the foe, but be too late to prevent the slaughter of the civilians. A few paces to his right, there was a heavy bolter turret. Its gunner was dead, but the weapon was still functional. Hagaren manned it, even as Barbarin's voice came in over his comm bead.
"Brother," Barbarin said, "we could use your assistance."
2 choices now. The first was whether to join the ground-level combat or hold his position. And it was really no choice at all. To give up any tactical advantage was irrational in the extreme. The second choice was where to aim the turret. Turn it to face the interior of the redoubt and provide assisting fire, or train it on the larger body of the enemy still surging towards the breach. Again, there was really no choice. Hagaren opened fire. The turret's chug, chug, chug was the pounding rhythm of Vulcan's hammer, the perfect regularity of machined death, blasting Xenos and heretic mercenaries to bloody pulp.
Hagarin, Barbarin voxed. I am doing what I must, brother,
Hagarin responded. And that was not concentrating on a specific skirmish whose outcome would not be affected by any action on his part. He was laying waste to the foe, damaging his war-making capacity by culling his numbers and slowing his advance. The invaders charged forwards in their hundreds. There were far more than Hagarin could hope to kill, but they were not infinite. As the turret's mass-reactive shells exploded flesh and bone, punching bursts of dirt and blood skywards, the assault lost strength and momentum. Hagarin made a difference. But not the right one, as far as Barbarin was concerned. It was the first time Hagarin had knowingly acted against the wishes of his brother. They had not been in concert. They had been at cross-purposes. Hagarin's worst sin, it appeared, was a distorted sense of priorities. He learned this after the battle. After the war, Heliosa was secure, and the slow staunching of Nocturne's wounds had begun. It was then, while Hagarin was salvaging usable weaponry from the field, that Barbarin confronted him.
You abandoned us, Barbarin said without preamble. I made a decision based on tactical necessities.
The people of Nocturne are our charges.
It seemed to Hagarin that his battle brother was speaking from an impulse of sentiment, not reason.
Our duty was the successful prosecution of the war. I followed my duty.
And then the question came. Barbarin shook his head.
What are you?
He said, and walked away. Puzzled, Hagarin had watched the other salamander as he receded through smoking metal and charred rubble, then turned back to his work. The question was an odd one, but he did not feel its full weight just then. What he felt was the rift with Barbarin. To the extent that he still experienced emotions at all, the loss of that comradeship gnawed at him, and would continue to do so in the days and months that followed. It was the news about Argos that turned the question into a refrain that no force of reason or passage of time could exorcise. Argos's mind had been infected by an enemy attack, turning him from his true course, making him act against his brothers. The Forge Master had realized what was happening and managed to excise the infection, but not before causing considerable damage. The event disturbed Hagarin. That Argos, one of the mightiest of the chapter's tech marines, could be attacked at such a fundamental level was more than a warning against complacency. Hagarin was engaged on a path that meant a metamorphosis of body and of self. If the greatest of his kind was vulnerable, then so was he. And how was he to monitor his journey? How was he to know if his transformation took him down deviant paths? What are you? The question did not have the easy answer it should. He reached the Engineerium. This would be his field in the battle ahead. He would be guardian of the verdict of the anvil, preserving its spirit and maintaining its body as the ship brought the fury of Vulcan down on the long-awaited foe. Surrounded by machines, immense beasts of metal flesh and plasma heart, he was among kin. Litanies of battle, sanctity, and calm sprang to his lips. He began his communion with his gargantuan charge, preparing the ship for the fight. Tech crew and servitors flew to the tasks he assigned them, and the cavernous space echoed with the thrum and clatter of a collective action as perfectly timed and choreographed as it was precise. The question's refrain faded into the background of Hagaren's consciousness as he became one with the verdict. The mechanistic dance of war began. On the main tacticarium screen, Mulcibar watched the enemy transition into the materium. The orc warlord was coming in strong. The massive kill cruiser was escorted by a cluster of attack and ram ships. Mulcibar was looking at a storm system of brute aggression. The squadron was an expression of green skin nature. The ships were ramshackle, blunt in form and function, and dangerous in the extreme. The very fact that, against all logic, they did not spontaneously explode was itself a sign that to underestimate the orcs would be suicidal. The verdict of the anvil was massively outnumbered. It was alone. It was more than strong enough. The predator waited, silent, running dark for the orcs to come within range.
"Nova cannon powering up," Farnes reported.
"Thank you, Helmsmaster," Mulcibar answered.
He would strike the orc cruiser a death blow, then close in to exterminate surviving ships. He planned to avoid close quarters fighting. The decision was a pragmatic one. A commander who rushed in to grapple with the orcs was playing the greenskins' game and was a fool. There was nothing heroic in throwing away the lives of warriors and crew. This orc, through the schemes of his underlings, had already proven himself the most dangerous of his kind Mulcibar had ever heard of, barring the Beast of Armageddon. But he would shortly be ash. Mulcibar eyed the screens, waiting for the Nova cannon to be fully charged and for the target to be acquired. As yet, the orc squadron showed no sign of being aware of the verdict of the anvil's presence.
"Target within range,"
the gunnery officer called out, and the cannon was ready. Mulcibar opened his mouth to give the order. Then the astropathic choir sang and changed everything. The music of the gears had been disrupted. The hymns of the engines were unsung. The captain had summoned him to the bridge. When he arrived, Hagaren saw that Barbarin and all the other squad leaders had been assembled too. A second full briefing so soon after the last, and a critical action aborted. The Tech Marine did not like the portents. Mulcibar's expression also boded ill. It was thunderous with frustration and distaste.
"Brothers," he said, "I have received a communication whose urgency is matched only by its timeliness."
He spat the last word. Hagaren had never seen his captain in a rage. This came close. Mulcibar paused for a moment before continuing. When he spoke again, his tone was a bit more phlegmatic, as if he recognized the need for what he was going to say, bitterly though he might resent it.
"The message is from the Storm Seer of the White Scars. We cannot destroy our foe's ship. We must board it."
He grimaced as if his next words left a sour taste in his mouth even before being spoken.
"We must board it and extract an Eldar prisoner."
There was a moment of silence. Hagaren had seen a familiar light blaze up in Barbarin's eyes at the mention of a boarding action, and his battle brother would not be alone, he knew, in relishing the idea of taking the battle to the orcs on a more personal level. But the mission the captain had just described was obscene.
Extract?
Nelius began.
Alive,
Mulcibar clarified. In Vulcan's name, Barbirin said softly. Captain, why?
Our brothers in the Raven Guard have been encountering orcs that are very large and aggressive. Unnaturally so. As if anything about the greenskins can be said to be natural. The strength they are demonstrating is of great concern, however.
What does this have to do with our rescuing an Eldar? Nelius asked.
He is a seer, and he knows why this is happening,
Mulcibar answered.
Our duty, as distasteful as it might be, is clear. We must board the Orc ship, find the Eldar, and extract him.
His voice turned grim with menace.
We will then take what we need to know from him.
It had been a long time since Hagaren had experienced anything that he would have described as visceral. He did so now. The racial memory of millennia of slaver raids on the people of Nocturne rose in his blood. It demanded satisfaction. That Nocturne was a stalking ground for the Dark Eldar and not their less hedonistic kin was for every salamander a distinction without a difference. The mission was perverse. Its irony had a tactile cruelty.
The boarding party will consist of two tactical squads,
Mulcibar said,
led by Sergeants Barbirin and Nelius.
He turned to Hagaren.
Brother, he said, your skills will be especially needed. We do not know anything about the layout of the ship, much less where the prisoner might be held. Learn everything you can. Guide your brothers.
Hagaren lowered his head.
In Vulcan's name, he said, and with his aid, I will complete this task.
When he looked up, he noticed the look on Barbarin's face. The other salamander's lack of expression was eloquent. The Predator had been preparing itself for war. It still was, but for a very different sort. The engines powered up and the walls of stone and steel vibrated with their gathering strength. The verdict of the anvil was going to plunge into the orc maelstrom. It would be hunting hard prey. In the solitorium, Barbirin also prepared for war. He was engaged in a private communion with his Primarch before joining his brothers for the communal prayer. His weapons had been cleaned, loaded, and anointed. They and his armor and the priest who would dress him in his raiment of war awaited him in the next chamber. Here only Akakios, his brander priest, waited on him. Clad in a loincloth, Barbirin knelt over a fire pit. The heat from the incandescent coals washed over him. He opened his flesh and soul to the purifying sear of the forge, the strengthening pain of the anvil. He thought about the mission and made himself confront all the elements of it that rankled. He focused most of all on the rescue of the Eldar prisoner. He brought all of his revulsion and hatred for that race to the surface and gave himself over to a spasm of absolute fury. He gave his anger to the fire so that the forge burned the extraneous emotions away, leaving only duty. When he felt his rage retreat before a calm that was no less implacable, no less determined, he rose and turned to face Akakios. I am ready, he told the priest. Akakios stepped forwards. The serf's narrow, ascetic face was a lined map of age and piety. He placed the end of his branding rod in the fire pit, heating it to a red glow. Then he brought it up to Barberine's chest. To a topography of victories and pledges, he added the brand of another holy promise. Barberine stood motionless as he accepted the pain. It was the symbol of duty and its reminder. It was the mark of this mission, binding his life to its completion. The calm he had achieved absorbed the pain and honored it. Cleansed, steeled, and determined, he strode out of the chamber to don his armor. When he emerged from the solitorium, he found Nellius waiting for him, helm under his arm.
"Brother Sergeant," he said, nodding in greeting.
"Brother Sergeant," Barberine returned. "Shall we?" He began to walk down the hallway, heading for the ramps that would take them down to the torpedo deck.
"Would you indulge my curiosity for a moment?" Nellius asked.
Barberine paused, his precious calm fraying ever so slightly.
"Of course," he answered, though an intuition told him that he should not be eager to hear Nellius's question. "You have your doubts about Techmarine Hagarin's role in this mission, don't you?"
Barberine gave a soft, rueful laugh at his own expense. In his meditation of purging, he had concentrated so completely on the Eldar that he had avoided confronting his other source of disquiet. And now here was Nellius, the unknowing tool of fate, to punish him for his dishonesty. Barberine accepted his chastisement as his due.
"Was I that obvious?"
"Hardly," Nellius said, sounding amused as well as concerned. "You didn't react at all."
"And that was, in itself, a reaction."
"Given the former cohesion of your fighting unit, yes."
"You think I don't trust Brother Hagarin?"
"So it would appear."
"And so it is," Barberine admitted. "I do not."
"You blame his conversion to Techmarine?"
"I do."
Barberine began walking again, slowly. "I believe that he has divided loyalties. I believe that he is finding it difficult to reconcile the Cult Mechanicus and the Promethean Creed. And so, I believe that his judgment is suspect." Nellius frowned.
"Forgive me, brother, but you speak as if Techmarines were unknown in our chapter."
"I am not speaking in general. I have the most profound..."
"Trust?" Nellius put in.
"Respect," Barberine finished, "for our three masters of the forge. But I can see the difference between Hagarin as he was and as he now is, and some of his decisions are unsound."
"If you are referring to what happened at Heliosa, his actions were entirely justifiable from a tactical perspective."
"That they were justifiable doesn't make them right."
Nellius shrugged but said nothing, and they walked on in silence for a minute. Barberine wasn't sure whether to read agreement or dissent on Nellius's part. The other sergeant was one of the most even-tempered souls Barberine had ever encountered. Though his ferocity in battle was a sight to behold, and he did not admit even to the mere existence of the word retreat, his attitude towards war was very different from Barberine's. The distinction lay, Barberine thought, in the fact that where he saw war as the destruction of enemies, Nellius saw instead the defense of the Imperium, of their home world, and of the innocent. Barberine exulted in the furnace of conflict, and for this he made no apologies, but he respected Nellius's more measured philosophy. It was often a valuable corrective when his own enthusiasms threatened to get the better of him. And he had no quarrel with Nellius's sense of priority. In the end,
Barbirin, too, fought to preserve, no matter how enthusiastically he sought the fight. So he was surprised that Nellius showed any sympathy at all for Hagaren's choice at Heliosa. Nellius did not speak again until they had almost reached the torpedo deck. "Are you really doubting his loyalty? Because if you are, then you must in good conscience warn the captain and the chaplain." Barbirin sighed. "No," he said, "I'm sure he is loyal, or at least that he believes himself to be."
"Meaning?"
"In leaving the flesh behind, he is forgetting that he is not a machine, and that he should not be thinking like one. If he loses all connection with the fact that we are, all of us, however much we have been transformed, human, then he will make decisions that will take nothing human into account. In the field, those decisions could have terrible consequences."
"I see."
Nelios's tone was neutral, non-committal, and Barbirin couldn't tell if he agreed or not. But at least Nellius was following the thread of his logic. "And we are about to embark on a mission that will require Hagaren to immerse himself in machinery of Xenos design," Nellius said. "If he should lose himself in the inorganic, he might act only in its interests."
"And we will be in his hands," Barbirin finished.
The torpedo deck opened up before them. Nestled low in the hull, it was an immense temple consecrated to the destruction of enemies. Row upon row of tubes lined walls that rose dozens of meters. Gantry cranes and gangways fed servitors and ordnance to their positions. At the forward end, a colossal bas-relief sculpture of Vulcan dominated the space. The Primarch's hammer was smashing an anvil, and flashing outwards from the blow were the streaks of torpedoes bound on their missions of righteous punishment. The squads were assembled. The parchments of new oaths of moment hung from the armor of the Space Marines, fluttering slightly in the light breeze of the ventilation system. The salamanders were gathered to pledge unity and duty. In their reptile green armor, emblazoned by the snarling profile of their namesake, they were the most honorable of paradoxes. They were both Drake and Knight. They were self-reliance and devotion to brotherhood. And at their gathering, Barbirin's chest never failed to swell with pride and humility. Hagaren was standing in the shadows cast by a loom strip shining through a walkway. He was motionless, his servo arms folded behind his back. He might have been an empty suit of armor, but for the intensity of the red glow behind his eye lenses. He was standing beside the access hatch to a boarding torpedo. Barbirin felt another wave of unease as he regarded his old friend. Then he felt shame, not because of his suspicions, but because they made him a hypocrite. As he entered into the rituals that bound the salamanders to each other and to their cause. It was almost a relief when, with the blaring of klaxons, war came early.